This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome to Enterprise Explorers. I'm Rich Bradbury, and this is the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. Today, we're going to speak a little bit about food waste and how it represents a significant challenge, particularly during festive periods when celebrations often lead to excessive food production and consumption. So here in Malaysia, as in many parts of the world, festivals such as Ramadan see markets and households overflow with food, much of which unfortunately goes to waste. This not only impacts the environment through increased landfill use and greenhouse gas emissions, but also represents a considerable economic loss. In an article by CNA, it mentioned that according to the Solid Waste Management and Public Cleansing Corporation, Malaysia would waste around 75,000 tons of food during Ramadan alone, or about 15 to 20% more compared to other months if nothing is done to reduce wastage. Meanwhile, in an update on Wiki Impact, it shared that if food loss and food waste was a country, it would be the third biggest greenhouse emissions producing nation. And recently, the Wiki Impact team spoke to several traders at bazaars about what they did with unsold food, and most said that they have and would donate it to those in need. Now, addressing this issue requires a multifaceted approach involving consumers, businesses, social enterprises, nonprofits, and government bodies. Innovative solutions and strategic partnerships are essential for effective management and reduction of food waste. Technology, for instance, can play a pivotal role in tracking and managing food inventory more efficiently during these peak festive seasons, helping to align supply with demand more accurately. Public awareness and behavioral change are also critical. Through educational campaigns and community engagement, stakeholders can significantly alter, we hope, public perception and habits regarding food consumption and wastage. I'll be speaking with Justin Chia, the marketing director for Kachara Soup Kitchen Society. If you don't know who these guys are, they are a non-religious community action group that distributes food, basic medical aid, and counseling to the homeless and urban poor of Malaysia. Justin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting.
My absolute pleasure. I love what you guys are doing, and I've appreciated what you guys have been doing for years and kind of been admiring from afar, let's say. Folks, if you have any questions for us and for Justin, get in touch via our U-Mobile WhatsApp number, 018-789-8899, or get us on X at BFM Radio. Justin, I just want to start off with definitions. So,
okay.
The definition of food wastage compared to food loss, is there a difference?
Oh, yes, there are. Actually, food loss is what has been produced, quote-unquote, from the harvesting site or in the preparation site before the meal comes to your table.
I see.
So that is food loss.
Right.
It can be because of accident or deliberate and many other aspects. But food waste is what we define as the food is actually ready to be consumed but ended up being wasted because oversupply and quality turned bad, etc., etc. So a lot of factors play into this, actually.
All right. Now, I know you've been involved with Kachara since the beginning of Kachara, 16, 17 years, something like
That's
that.
That's right.
And I guess when I ask you this question, it's a question that seems to be a fairly simple question but has a very, I suspect, complicated answer. What are the biggest challenges when it comes to reducing food waste, especially when it comes to these festivals that we know and love here in Malaysia?
Yeah. Well, the biggest challenges that we felt are, we cannot expect. That's sometimes we don't expect things to turn out that way. So that's where you have wastage. Mm. For example, you're holding an event where you're supposed to house 1,000 people but ended up with only 500. Mm. Then what happens to the food? Then you have to scramble and find a way to resolve it. Otherwise, it's been wasted if you care enough. You know. So by the time we get notified, it could have been just too late. Mm. And, you know, you're running a whole day event and we get notified at 6 p.m. And that's not good because the food has really been exposed for too long. So this is one of the major factors, actually. So, and of course, you have other factors as well, such as weather. You know, you're holding a bazaar Ramadan, you know, talking about raining, just rain at 5. And you're looking at your pile of food that it's already been cooked. So what happens next?
Right.
Yeah. So it's the major of this issue could be just because, you know, we cannot expect. It's something that we don't expect and it happened.
There's also, I would argue as well, that there's also an issue with Malaysians about they don't want to be embarrassed about not providing enough food.
I was about to say that, but you see, it doesn't happen to everyone.
Right.
And people are more conscious these days. Those days, yes.
Yeah.
You know, like, for example, hotels, they have to really make it look lavish so that it's more tempting for people to come in, right? So that's the way to do business.
Yeah.
But then again, you have someone more conscious these days, especially after pandemic. You know, people start to have this culture of registering or booking your meal and all that. So then that actually helped a lot.
I mean, I can speak from a personal perspective because it wasn't all that long ago that we were arranging at my house people to come over for dinner or for an event. And we, in our mind, knew how much we wanted to provide.
That's right.
Without over-providing or over-preparing. And yet there were other people coming to that event who were like, no, you need to buy this and you need to buy that. And I'm sure you've been in that position at some point in your life as well.
Yeah.
And it becomes very difficult to say no, because it becomes such a cultural thing to make sure that there's an overabundance of food on a table, right?
Well, it's a nice gesture to welcome your guests that way, you see. Yeah, and you yourself as the host would want to also present yourself very well, that you are welcoming them rather than just a simple dinner get-together.
Yeah.
And it's a feel-good factor, you know, festival. In I have to reiterate this, food wastage, it's not only happening when it's on a high and during Ramadan, it happens
all year round.
Especially when you have big events, you know, weddings aside, many other events, like some form of conference that's happening, you know, like they expect a lot of guests to come and they have to pre-prepare. They can't be cooking and expect their guests to wait for the food. So that is the main thing here. You know, you can't really expect... You already booked your place, you must come. By hook or by crook, please make sure you're here. And it's not like some buffet who can charge you for every excess of 200 gram, I'm going to charge you for a certain amount.
Right, right. That happens, I know, in parts of the world. China, I know that in some places it happens.
Oh,
Korea,
yes.
I know it happens.
Yes.
Hong Kong, I believe
it
happens. It's a good thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But what can we do as individuals then, I guess, and change our everyday behavior to stop contributing to this issue, do you think?
Well, plan your purchases. That's the common knowledge. But always react on impulsive purchases sometimes. Depending on your situation, when you're too hungry, you tend to order more.
That's right. Don't go to a supermarket when you're hungry.
Well, look at your pocket then.
Right.
Yeah. So it's actually easier to plan these days. You know, I was saying that food wastage is more apparent before the pandemic, I would say. Yeah. And since the pandemic, you know, everyone struggled, you know, some might have lesser to spend these days. They're more careful with their spending and buying and whatnot. That helped. In the end of the day, it's just that you still have to really utilize and check your fridge regularly. That is just minimal request from everyone. You know,
need to make it a habit, right?
It's a habit and see what you have, you know, then let's do this today. You know, we have something, tomatoes, you know, let's do egg and tomato tomorrow for breakfast, for example. And if you're not sure even you're going to use it, don't buy. But then again, there's always, housewives who doesn't, you know, who have problems. I understand, because my wife used to nag on me as well, because, like, you know, what's for tomorrow? Do you want to eat this or that? So it's hard for her, I can imagine everyone, to plan for your family's meal. You just have to buy something extra.
Yeah. Some people don't want to plan as well. They want that element of surprise about what they're going to eat tomorrow, you know. And I find that often quite frustrating, you know, because when I was raised, it was like you plan your meals out for the week. And I know that sounds to some people like ridiculous. But in some way, it does help with your budgeting as well. It's not just about overconsumption. It's about looking at your budget and how you can manage that moving forward and making sure there isn't waste because you know what's coming up for that next particular week.
That's right.
Just before we go into a break, Justin, what would you say are some other effective strategies or standard procedures for managing food quantities, you know, particularly when it comes to restaurants or whatever? Is there like an SOP for this, would you say?
Well, they do. It's just that the situation is always in the play. You cannot expect what's the sales tomorrow.
Right.
You can always prepare.
Yeah.
And most of the time, you will prepare for the worst.
Mm.
And their so-called version of worst is to prepare in the case if they have a good business.
Yeah.
And the worst case scenario is when they don't have enough to produce for the demand they have. So that is what they feel as worse. So we always have this insecurity, right?
Yeah.
So that's restaurant.
Yeah.
They feel they had to stock up some stuff.
Yeah.
So that just to make sure that they have enough to supply.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It goes the same SOP would be applied to I believe in all the hypermarkets as well, which is why on a daily basis, as we speak now, our trucks, our volunteers, our dedicated people out there are now rescuing food from the hypermarkets as well as the hotels during the Ramadan.
I love how you put it as rescuing.
Rescuing, yeah. If you don't do anything about it, then imagine where would it end up to?
Yeah. In some landfill somewhere, right?
Yes.
Okay, we have to take a short break. Folks, I'm here in the studio with Justin Tier, the Marketing Director of Kachara Soup Kitchen Society. We'll be right back after these messages here on Enterprise Explores. This is the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line here on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Be free, Malaysia. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station. Welcome back to Enterprise Explores. This is the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. My name is Rich Bradbury. I've been speaking with Justin Cheer, the Marketing Director of Kachara Soup Kitchen Society. We are talking a little bit about food wastage this morning. Justin, just for a little bit, your organization, KSK Society, can you share some examples of, and we've kind of just been discussing it during the break here, examples of a successful program or initiative that has been implemented to combat food waste?
Well, we have this surplus food program that has been ongoing since 2016, whereby we would go out and collect food that we can salvage or rescue, rather, to rechannel it to people in need, like underprivileged individuals who are living in shelter homes. There are poor families that we have already registered all these years. So we kind of like collect from the surplus, redirect it to those who are actually suffering from food insecurity. So in this way, we are able to create a so-called community where we can help those who don't have by collecting from those who have too much. Yeah, not money, but food.
Now, when it comes to something like this, partnerships, I'm guessing, are essential.
Yes.
Especially for stuff like redistribution, logistics.
Yes.
And this is not something that just happens, as you mentioned, during festive seasons, a daily basis. Would different partnerships make a difference for different times of the year?
Well, it does, actually. You know, we, as retailers would know, they have low seasons as well. As well as those, for example, food manufacturers. Yeah, they have issues sometimes during the year and where they might have problem managing the surplus food that they end up with. So this is where we need to partner with more of the so-called suppliers or donors and to be able to resolve the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the common good.
So when you're redistributing this rescued food, how do you measure the impact of that on a particular community?
Well, we already know the charity partners that we've been working with. They are shelter homes, learning centers, where they actually they are literally the people on the ground helping the people who are really needy.
Yeah.
And many of them are actually in their database already. So what we do is we already get to know these charity partners. We sign them up as charity partners. There's about 250 and counting as of now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we are saying that what we are trying to say is we have a lot of choices where we can actually send the food to.
Which is a good thing.
Which is a great thing. Mm. So you just have to share it around and rotate. And now we are also saying that if you have surplus food, if you have products that is not so marketable, but it's actually safe, bring it to us. Mm. We can resolve the situation rather than you have to face it alone. But, you know, we are like an agent for the poor.
Mm.
And all you need to do is just contact us and we'll just link up. We'll find out details of the products and see who can take your product.
Mm.
And who actually would best use your product.
Mm.
Yeah.
And as we move forward, of course, we talk about technology advancing and things changing regularly, apps appearing here, there, and then the other. Yeah. What kind of role does tech play in what you guys are doing and what Kajara is doing nowadays? Is it food inventory? Is it stuff to do with logistics? Is it the whole thing? How do you guys include it in what you do?
It's a whole thing. And right from the connection part, like someone has to let us know if they have access food.
Yeah.
Someone who has to have access to information that somewhere has access food. Someone has to know the data that being collated. And then what is the quantity and whatnot? What is the amount of gas emission prevented? So and so forth. And you need a platform where everybody is on the same platform, where they know everything. And someone from our side would need to know if the food has already been collected and has already been checked quality-wise, you know, and quantity, and then be delivered to somewhere that we would know. Yeah, reporting and all that.
Right.
It's about transparency and being responsible to what you're being tasked upon.
Is there a kind of minimum amount of food that somebody could say to you, okay, we have this to give away? I mean, because some people, I mean, obviously, you know, whether or not it's 3 or 4 tapao bags or whatever. Is there a minimum amount? Because, I mean, some people will say, even if it's after a family meal and there's a few little bits and pieces left, they might think, well, you know, I don't want to throw this away, but we can't eat it. Mm-hmm. What do we do with it? You know, is there a minimum amount?
Well, there is a minimal amount, unfortunately, from our side, but it really depends on what sort of products are you talking about.
Right.
And the goal here is to help you with your issue.
Yeah.
And if it's too little, we can just direct them to the nearest charity homes.
Right.
Right. Then it will resolve. And I don't have to purposely come for that so-called 3-4 packet of tapao food. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that makes more sense. And we don't end up putting in more waste for rescuing something that is going to be waste.
Right. 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 Yeah. I get it. Do you think then that there should be incentives? And we kind of talked about it earlier with the buffets, you know, where they charge you or they charge the consumer when they don't finish. But should there be incentives for the food industry business to donate unsold food instead of just disposing of it?
Oh, yeah. There's a talk about it. Also, there's been multiple talks held between the big boys and the ministries about receiving certain incentives for donating their surplus food. So you see, the issue of surplus food nowadays is more apparent compared to those days.
Yeah.
So the government is also playing their part in helping to make sure that food doesn't go to waste and we can help more people. Why not?
Yeah. What do you think would be an ideal incentive then?
Well, people are looking at monetary reimbursement,
right,
more to be more encouraged of donating their surplus food.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, this will be up for more discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But what I felt is, even with the Good Samaritan law right now, it's already effective. Not many people are still encouraged to donate. There are more, but not to what we are expecting.
Mm.
People are still being wary about their brand, you know, just in case someone falls sick, although it might not be the cause of your product.
Yeah.
But people are wary of this. You know, one good thing, well, 100 good things that you've been doing all these years, then something like this just
spoils everything.
It will spoil everything. Mm. So they are very worried about that. So it's and there's an element that the donor would not know what's going to happen to the product that they've been donating. So the wise thing for them is to go on to a trusted party, for example, food banks like us, who can actually give you some form of reports, photos, to make sure that we know the product better or well, and it's 99%. You know, we know what sort of condition this product actually works.
Mm-hmm.
So then it gives a good trust. We form a good relation with the donor, and then we can form up a long-term partnership and say, whenever you have it, let me know. I'll just come over and pick it up.
Now, I don't know if you've, and I'm sure you have actually, read about this, but moving around in the press recently has been the potential for restaurants to close earlier.
Mm-hmm.
This has kind of come up for discussion right now to help solve a number of issues. You know, obesity is one of the issues that they're using, and, you know, how would that affect you guys at Kachara? And what's your opinion of this?
Well, I'm not from the business industry. Well, given the lifestyle that Malaysians generally have, it's hard to ask the restaurants to close that early.
Yeah.
It's not a culture that would work here compared to the West.
Mm, mm.
And then what about mamak restaurants?
We like to have a cup of tea at 9 p.m., you know.
Or even 3 p.m.,
or
3 a.m.
3 a.m., yeah.
But, you know, in reality, if you're talking about obesity, well, the answer to it, you could have just exercised more.
Yeah. Or put less sugar in your food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So cultivate on your eating style. Yeah, that could be it. And if it's hard to manage that part, it's really tough, because sometimes the mall opens until 10 p.m. and you can't expect the restaurants to just close by 8.
Yeah.
Yeah, then it will mean disaster for them as well.
Yeah.
So you're talking about the whole culture change.
Exactly, yeah.
People stop going to the malls because there's no food served after 8.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? And people tend to be late, and there's always traffic jam around. So it's hard to control that part unless the rest has been resolved. Name me one country in Asian region that has curfew like that.
Correct. And I'll be honest, one of the reasons I do stay here in Asia is because I can go out at any time and get food somewhere.
Yes. Yeah. Food actually is one of the main selling points for Malaysia.
Yeah, it is. It is. Okay, let's take a short break here. Folks, I'm here with Justin Chia. He's the Marketing Director of Kachara Soup Kitchen Society. We'll be right back in a few minutes here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome back to Enterprise Explores. This is the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines down to the bottom line. I am speaking with Justin Chia, the Marketing Director of Kachara Soup Kitchen Society. We've been exploring food loss and wastage and how by implemented maybe targeted interventions, there's potential to make substantial progress in reducing food waste during Malaysia's vibrant festivals and beyond that. Just before the break, Justin, I spoke to you about this idea of the government proposing that restaurants close earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think something like that would help reduce food wastage?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, why?
It's the mentality behind it. Mm. Like, you have the prerogative to prepare more food in advance in preparation of an immediate, let's say, surge of crowd in your restaurant. You yourself have to make sure that you have enough food to serve all your invitees. Otherwise, you lose face, right?
Well, yeah.
And we would have to have alternatives in our houses, you know, to just make sure that today, if we don't feel like eating this, we have plan B. So unless those changes, unless you stop overstocking your own inventory, this would change. No matter what time you open. In reality, if your restaurant operates for longer time, you end up wasting lesser. Wouldn't it be?
That's true.
You open the door for longer hours, people get access to your food, more. More chances for people to turn up in your restaurant.
That's a good point.
Right. So in the end of the day, it's the mentality of the people around. And well, I'll be saying that, you know what, I have a lot of money with me. I am responsible to what I spend.
Do you think consumers are aware about the amount of food that is wasted during?
Well, people generally aware. And the awareness has been increasing ever since the pandemic itself.
Yeah.
And we heard, like, you know, there's like a huge dumping of harvested vegetables in Cameron Highlands, for example. Yeah. Right? Remember that?
I remember seeing durians at the side of the road.
Oh, that's a luxury. I'm surprised it's on the road. But you're seeing those. But people are generally aware. But there are always this element of you cannot expect what's happening. No, what if the food doesn't turn out like the taste that you are expecting? You end up wasting it. And you don't expect someone else to come over and eat it on your behalf. So these are just small issues. What about, let's say, in hypermarket, they have this new product they're trying to promote to, and unfortunately it doesn't work. It didn't work, and they have too much surplus that they have to dispose. So those are unavoidable. So it's still, you know, you can blame it on the planning, procurement, your marketing and whatnot. But in the end of the day, you can't really prevent food from being wasted, let alone lost.
Do you think there's anything that the government could do in terms of policy to encourage people to waste food less?
Well, waste food less, that's one thing. The policy should be there. But you shouldn't be penalizing anyone. It just create the awareness so that people are aware. And as of now, people are more aware of it. Actually, I'm sure many out there actually are very conscious on their food intake, spending, purchases and whatnot. But in the end of the day, you still have to provide a platform for people to know where to drop it off. Where can they contribute this? And how, if they are expecting an event tomorrow, and they would already know what's the plan B. Where can I donate? Who can I contact? You know, you have one clear example. We have a counterpart in Indonesia. They link up with wedding planners.
Smart
or even
idea.
You know, like the couple, the brides to be. They would know already in expectant of food surplus during the night. And the party itself, the collecting agent, would already know where to deliver it to. And they already pre-informed the charity site as well to expect something is coming your way beforehand.
Are there hotels here in KL that do that?
Well, they don't do per se. There are a few who are actually very aware of it, which is very good. And we also ask them if they can freeze it. And much to our delight, they do.
They do.
Yeah. So they are able to freeze it and then we collect it much later. So the problem is with us as when you have so much requests coming in at the same time, when we are not able to spread our wings further. So that's where we will have this issue. So in order to help us along the way, if it's you're talking about cooked food, then of course if you are able to link us up earlier, then it will be best. Then we can do the planning. Whereas if you're talking about food products, dry products, you know, those ambience products, then you can actually pre-plan it before it sits too long in your inventory.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Then we can talk by the time the deal is done, then we are able to salvage whatever that is actually surplus. And you can see for yourself or can imagine just someone who actually needs food is actually taking your portion.
Now, you mentioned there just a few minutes ago about awareness. And, you know, this being something that we needs to be pushed out more. This message does need to be pushed out more.
Yeah.
Not just at these bazaars and not just, you know, festive times,
yeah,
whatever festivity it is, but public awareness campaigns. And how can they be structured then to effectively change perception around food waste?
Well, generally, maybe to my best perception is maybe people think that something that is surplus might be a risk to your health.
I've heard that before.
Right. And they don't want to take too much responsibility.
Yeah.
And that is becoming an issue. So if people are more trusting to it, general perception, if I will be to be given a plate of food that I know that it's actually rescued from some restaurant.
And I have difficulty with that, Justin.
Right.
I'll be honest, yeah.
Mm. Well, we would have certain extent of doubt to it. If we know the food for sure is coming from a safe source, a good packaging. We ourselves, when we are at the restaurants, right, we look at the better ones.
Yes.
Right. The presentable ones rather than the not so nice. So it's the same perception that everybody would want to have something that is nice, presentable. So that's why you have food lists.
Yeah.
In the first place.
Right.
Yeah. So when we have to put into this mindset whereby, you know, we should not take into the account of that too much. Well, it's food and you need food. Maybe you should salvage it, take care of it. And the way we handled it could have been better. Pack it nicely. Then it could lessen the chance of it being wasted along the way.
Now, what have you guys done to, I guess, you know, as KSK themselves, to help raise awareness of this? Have you been going to events? Do you hold events? Do you go into schools or you know, or facilities like this to speak with companies and individuals?
Well, we tend to inspire people with the actions that we are doing. Like for Ramadan, for example, we've been out there collecting every night.
Right.
Thanks so much to the volunteers who have been doing it and the people behind. We hope to inspire people to create that kind of impactful message out there that, hey, you know what? This food actually rescued. And when they look at it, when the people, the children who was actually collecting the fruit from the shelter that we already sent to, you can look at their faces. Their faces so much brighter.
Right.
When they look at the satays, you know, for example, the roti johns and whatnot that we can rescue. These are all rescued food.
Yeah.
And it's all packed not normally from the buffet lines that you saw, but it's on the plate of some simple packaging.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter to them. For them, it's
food
some luxury.
Yeah.
Because it's hotel food.
Yeah.
But then again, if you're talking about some other food from another restaurant, it could have been a different perception altogether.
Mm.
Yeah.
Justin, I've really enjoyed speaking with you today. And, well, and thank you for helping highlight this.
Thank you.
You know, and we know it's not going to go away anytime soon. But it is something I think little by little we can kind of chip away at this problem.
Yeah.
And hopefully in a few years' time, people will be much more aware of this and willing to kind of share this overabundance of food that we all love here in Malaysia. That's what makes Malaysia, Malaysia.
Yeah.
You know, food is everything here.
Yeah.
You know,
it's only impactful when everybody starts doing it.
Yeah.
You know, there's always this consensus that, you know what, I'm just creating this little bit of waste here. You know what? It's just negligible. But actually, if everyone starts the same thing, then you have a big issue there.
We have that mountain of food waste that we mentioned at the top of the show. Okay. Justin, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Folks, I've been speaking with Justin Cheer, the Marketing Director for Kachara Soup Kitchen Society. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can catch the podcast on our website at bfm.my or download the BFM app. You can also find our shows on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and other podcast players. Just search for Enterprise Explores. Keep you here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.